As a Buddhist, I'd like to start opening space for the sermon by giving an intention, and I will close at the end with a dedication. If any good comes from what we're doing here today, may it spread out and be of benefit to all sentient beings contributing to their enlightenment. And I also want to say a quick thank you to my husband, in back, wave your hand. He is my muse. I would not be standing here. When Reverend Katie sent an email and said, would you do the sermon on Martin Luther King, the first thing that I did was turn to my husband and say, will you help me? So he sits in back, and you all look at me and listen to me, but just realize that these words are his as well as mine. So thank you, Vern. There's a few times in life, if you're lucky, you'll see a face. It's the face of a teacher, the face of a mentor, the face of a friend. This face can be any color. It can be any gender. It can be any shape. But it always has the same look. It's a look of countenance that's frank and deep. It has integrity. It's a countenance of open acceptance. It has a countenance that has met joy and pain. It's a countenance that will seek your eyes to see your soul. I love Martin Luther King's face. He has such a face, this wonderful, round, open face. And he spoke of love, agape love, a deep, reverential love for God, the world, and its beings. How can a person who received death threats teach me about love? How can such a man scorn hate when he saw people, including children, assaulted with hoses and batons and dogs and whips? Kenneth B. Clark held an interview during which Dr. King discussed agape love. Dr. King said, and I quote, "I find it pretty difficult to like people like Bull Connor." Bull Connor was a violent, bigoted law enforcement officer. "I find it difficult to like Senator Eastman, but I think you can love where you can't like, because life has that affectionate quality." Clark responded, quote, "I have admired your ability to feel this, and I must say to you that as I read your expounding on the philosophy of love, I have found myself feeling personally quite inadequate." Me too, Mr. Clark. Me too. Ever since the election in 2016, I've stopped watching the news. I find myself getting too embroiled emotionally. I yell at the television set. I react. I don't respond to the world's events. But nobody's ever bombed my house. Nobody in my life, I've received precisely zero death threats. I struggle to love everyone. Dr. King's house was bombed several times. The first time was literally within 9 months of him starting with the desegregation movement. One day, the phone rang and he heard, and this is a quote, "Nigger, we are tired of you and your mess now. If you ain't out of this town, Montgomery, Alabama, in 3 days, we're going to blow out your brains and blow up your house." 3 days later, his house was bombed. He rushed home. He didn't know if his wife and his infant child was okay. And when he got home, he saw 1,000 supporters already surrounding his house, many carrying guns and weapons. While the dust was still settling from the explosion, I mean, imagine standing in front of your house, ripped apart, the dust is still settling from the explosion, he said, quote, "Now let's not become panicky. If you have weapons, take them home. And if you don't have weapons, please don't seek to get them. We cannot solve this problem through retaliatory violence. We must meet violence with nonviolence. Jesus cries out in words that echo through the centuries, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, pray for them that despitefully use you. This is what we must live by. We must meet hate with love." End quote. And he did this while he was flanked by Montgomery's sheriff, and Montgomery's mayor, who were members of the White Citizens Council, who were dedicated to preserving segregation. So as I explored his life, I wondered, where does he get this strength? Where does he get this integrity? He was raised in a middle-class family. His father was a stern Baptist preacher, his mother a gentlewoman. Yet even though he had middle-class privileges, daily he felt the sting of segregation, that a constant reminder of his inferiority. Segregation, as defined by the United States Supreme Court in 1896, was separate but equal. This means if you were a black person and you needed a new pair of shoes, you would take an outline of your foot to the shoe store. You would sit in back, and you were not allowed to try on the shoes. Separate but equal. We've all heard about the segregation on buses. Whites in the front, blacks in the back. But what that means is, as a black person, you would get on the front, pay your 20-cent fare, get off the bus, walk to the back door, get on, and find a seat. There is documentation of some drivers driving away as a person got off the front door before they could get into the back door. And they weren't allowed to walk down the aisle. Facing these daily injustices, Martin Luther King, as a child, struggled with the idea of love. How can I love a race of people who hate me? But his father insisted on developing his capacity for love. At the age of 15, Martin Luther King won an essay writing contest at his school. Imagine that. He won at the school, and then he was invited to state. So he went to state and competed at state, and he won. He won with an essay entitled, "The Negro and the Constitution." Imagine how he felt, this 15-year-old competing at state level. He and his teacher boarded the bus to go home for the 90-mile ride home. And during the ride, they were forced to give up their seats to white people. The driver actually yelled at them for not moving fast enough. King wanted to protest, but his teacher suggested that he should just comply. There's no sense in getting arrested. Even as a child, Martin Luther King was known for his compassion. He always responded to the marginalized, the vulnerable, and the poor of our world. People of any race standing in a bread line was said to have broken his heart. He went to college intending to help people. He wanted to become a doctor or a lawyer, not a reverend, because his father, while growing up, his father was very faithful, but he wouldn't allow deep analysis of the Bible. And Martin Luther King just really struggled with some of the concepts that were in the Bible, some of the stories that were told in the Bible. For example, Christ's resurrection. Martin Luther King didn't buy it. But at college, he met two deeply religious men who turned him back towards religion. These were Benjamin Elijah Hayes, he was Morehouse College's president, and George Kelsey, who was head of Morehouse College's religion department. Both of these men engaged in a deep analysis of Bible and religion. They served as significant mentors to Martin Luther King for the rest of his life. Dr. King said of them, quote, "Both were ministers, both deeply religious, yet both were learned men, aware of all the trends of modern thinking. I could see in their lives the ideal of what I wanted a minister to be," end quote. And so he graduated college, a third-generation Baptist minister. Our theme for this month is integrity, refusing to hide. There's a photograph of Dr. Martin Luther King giving a speech, and right behind him stands a protester with a sign that says, "Martin Luther King would look good with a knife in his back." Martin Luther King refused to hide. He said, and I quote, "I have to do this, expose myself to draw out this hate into the open," end quote. That's why I titled this sermon, "Holy, Holy." Life was not easy for Martin Luther King, nor for the people around him. At one point early in his activism career, his father sat him down, surrounded by friends and families and mentors, and begged him to give up his desegregationist activities. Martin Luther King's house had just recently been bombed, about 2 months previously. Since the bombing, his mother had gone to bed and hadn't gotten out of bed. His father begged him to stop. Dr. King listened to the arguments and the discussion. Then he politely got up and said, quote, "It would be the height of cowardice for me to stay away. I have begun the struggle. I cannot turn back. I have reached the point of no return." He had continuously throughout his career, he had pressure around him to give up the fight, to take the fight more slowly. He suffered from migraines and depression. He was hospitalized for exhaustion during his career. I read you Dr. Martin Luther King's public statement from the night his house was bombed. Privately, he said to a friend, and I quote, "I felt on the verge of a corroding hate." To me, Dr. King, imperfect, struggling to be the best he can be, that is holy. If you ever walk up to our offices up here, there's a poster that says, "Love is hard. Do it anyway." At first, Dr. King was looking for the black people to get a fair share of the pie. But as time went on, he got involved with the Vietnam War. He became active in the ghettos. He became involved with poverty just in general. And he realized we need a different pie. And so he started to plan and call for a revolution. He wanted it conducted through nonviolent protest. And this is a quote, "The dispossessed of this nation, the poor, both white and Negro, live in a cruelly unjust society. They must organize a revolution against that injustice, not against the lives of their fellow citizens, but against the structures through which society is refusing to take the means to lift the load of poverty." And a second quote, "Negroes not only have to formulate a program, but they have to fashion new tactics, which do not count on the government's goodwill, but serve instead to compel unwilling authorities to yield to the mandates of justice." Near the end of Martin Luther King's life, the FBI declared this Nobel Peace Prize winning, love-teaching, nonviolent Baptist minister the most dangerous man in America. And who says nonviolence doesn't work? Dr. King knew he was in danger of losing his life. It was a week before he was murdered. He went to visit his mother and father to tell them of his imminent danger. Even then, he didn't stop loving. He didn't resort to violence. And he didn't hide. And so here we have a man who understood deeply and experientially that peace is intrinsically linked to justice. Peace is intrinsically linked to justice. The holiness of King was his willingness to continue to hope, to struggle, to develop new vision, to call others to a new America, right in the middle of the nightmares and the despair and the brutally broken bodies. He asked, "Who is my neighbor? What does love demand?" That frank, earnest visage is still looking out at us from photographs and statues. And he is teaching us, he is teaching us how to love. I dedicate any merits accumulated through these virtuous actions to the quick enlightenment of all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment to some and aversion to others.
Okay, so thank you, Terry, for sharing your thoughts and words with us today. Do you have anything you'd like to start out with before? You'd like to say before we start?
The only thing I would say is thank you for listening. I mean, I could have given five different, and more than that, but easily I could have given five different speeches. I had one on nonviolence. I had one on the Montgomery boycott. I mean, I think all these things kind of all weave together. And I got to choose my topic, and I just really appreciate you folks letting me do that and listening to it. So,
awesome.
I hope I'm not putting words or thoughts in your mouth, but I really appreciated your reference to news and mainstream media, because I often also say that I am so privileged that I can choose how much I expose myself to the news, and that I get to balance engaging and disengaging in the national and international news, and just that I am privileged that I can do that, because I don't go to bed at night or wake up in the morning fearing for my life, mm-hmm. or the life of my family or the life of my children, like maybe a refugee might, or the mother of a black boy might feel. So I'm really aware that because of my white privilege, that I can do that. I can choose to not engage with the news, and I that's what I heard when you mentioned that. So thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, that's a good point, Lisa.
Any questions, comments?
I'd just like to make, first of all, I'd like to say thank you. Secondly, I'd like to make the point, and I'd like to elaborate just on what the lady
Lisa
just said
saying.
Over here about the white privilege. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a great deal of, there's so much of the world today that is just like it was here 150 years ago, or worse. Sometimes those have-nots aren't marked with different colors, but they're marked with some way. Look at India today, the prime minister over there in his work. Even in Russia, there's more of that left. But certainly, look at the 300,000 people who are displaced in, what, the last 2-3 months? I just think that, first of all, we're very lucky, but I wish there was some way we could counteract that. If we got a way to, maybe we get together and write 1 million letters or something like that. I really don't know. But I am grateful. And when you look around, boy, there's a lot of the world that just was like it was here when Martin Luther King spoke.
Absolutely. Yes, thank you. And
if I can just respond to that quickly, I totally agree with you. We've got a lot of work cut out for us ahead. And I'm hoping part of what you heard was that Martin Luther King, I mean, just imagine the enormity of what was facing him, and children being chased by dogs because they were exercising their constitutional rights. I mean, it's just amazing. But he did get discouraged. He frequently got discouraged, but he always got back up and always got back on the horse. And so I think, yes, we have a long way to go, but I think the more people we have like us who have that worldview of brotherhood and sisterhood and interdependence, I think we will slowly make this revolution. We got a lot of work ahead of us.
So I really appreciated the part where you talked about agape love and how that this was part of MLK's, you know, Christian viewpoint. And I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on, you know, how we can kind of sort of address that topic with some of these extreme right-wing people who consider themselves Christians but still view African Americans as less than.
Yeah. Martin Luther King had the view that agape love was the goal. And I mean, it was kind of this pervasive, overarching thing, and some people can't get there. So the launching off platform, and I'm interpreting him from what I read, but his launching off platform was nonviolence. And so the people who couldn't make that whole emotional switch to agape love could do, and that, I mean, it's hard enough to be nonviolent. You know, if I came up and punched you, it's a natural reaction to want to punch me back, right? And so the step that he urged people to take was one of embrace nonviolence in your life. That doesn't mean sit down and don't do anything. I mean, you can see his whole movement was nonviolence. He was declared the most dangerous black man in America But he didn't have a army. You know, he said, don't hurt anybody. And yet he was a dangerous man. So be nonviolent, have your opinions, get in the way. And that can be the stepping stone, I think, to get up to agape love. I mean, that's kind of what I opened with, is that's what I really struggle with, is like I wish I could feel true love for all people at all times, and I don't. I have to really practice that, but I can practice nonviolence. It's an easier step for me to take, so I hope that addresses your question.
I think it's important that we remember that he had two African-American friends who were very close to him, one of whom was much more aggressive and willing to use violence, and another, and I'm trying to remember their names. They were his close shadows. And
you're not talking about Malcolm X.
Who?
Malcolm X.
No.
Okay.
No, these were two other guys.
His friends.
Yeah, and King was also a brilliant strategist. So when he saw what was going on with the hoses and the dogs, he spotted the dog that was going to go after this teenage boy and immediately said, take that photo. Mm-hmm. That can go national. So he really was smart about what kinds of things make a difference in the media. It wasn't just that he was about love. He was also aggressively looking at how he could get a wedge into this society anyway. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Suzanne, thanks for that. I think the idea of aggressive nonviolence is is not antithetical to each other. It's about
fierce.
Being fierce, yes, and saying, I really believe in this, and I'm going to go chain myself to this tree or, you know, whatever it is, and some people are going to find it very offensive.
Again, thank you for your message today. I've tried not looking at the news. And I find I can't do it. I've got to watch it. But it also, and I've discovered in recent weeks, that it's become, it is a depressing event, a depressing thing to do. And I've had the thought in recent days that because to me, we are in some dark time. That's just my opinion. Others may have differences. But I think we are in a dark time. And it occurred to me while I heard you speak about his hope and his emphasis upon agape that maybe this is the pendulum time that's to one of the directions, whichever, I guess, right is often more conservative, whatever. And that we need at this point to be that agape type of person in all of our activities, which is hard to do, to say the least, but that by doing that, we will begin to see the pendulum swing back. I think we've had some great times in the world when peace was existed, but there's never been total peace around the world. Africa, Middle East are great examples of where there have been tremendous violence for years and years and years. But I'm hopeful that we are in the swing and that it's maybe reached its arc and will come back. And that when it does come back, my hope is that this concept of agape, if it can be undertaken by each of us, will swing it further than it swung before. So that the millions of people who suffer from oppression, war, etc., will find some relief and the world will find some peace.
Yeah, and I personally, I just really agree with you that what gets me out of bed in the morning is I do see it as a pendulum. And I think in order for this pendulum to have momentum to move forward, it has to move back. And we're in that backward movement, in my opinion, right now. And it makes it, to me, it makes it a very difficult time to be alive. But then I try to remind myself that with that is that things are ripe for change. And I can be a big part of that. I can influence things in a way, like if everything were sunny and rosy, I'd have a much harder time influencing life. And so I can be part of that influence. And so that's where I draw hope in these times. And I'm also lucky that my husband does watch the news and he gives me little brief reports. He filters it for me because this delicate little girl can't hear it all. Part of it is to go, kind of going back to what Lisa was talking about. We live in a different time. You know, news is 24/7 now, and so it can be really overwhelming. So it's hard to keep up without getting into the overwhelm. But I think you make a few really good points that life is challenging right now, but it also creates an opportunity for us. And the more we can spread the word, and the more we can be, you know, think about Martin Luther King. He was not going to be a reverend until he met two role models who went, oh, that's what you mean by a reverend. We can be that to people in our lives. We can be the flame. They're like, oh, I want to be like that. So, yeah.
I thought it was interesting when you mentioned that he began to question some of the miracles in the Bible, such as the resurrection. And I wondered if you read anything more about that. When he decided that he would embrace religion, it would seem almost impossible for someone to say, oh, wait, now I believe in that type of thing.
Yeah.
That he must have found some, like all of us, very few of us believe in that, but we're here and we're religious in this sense. And I wonder how he fused those two dynamics.
I looked specifically for that because, like you, I had that exact same question. Like, where's that bridge? I couldn't find it. So if you ever find it, let me know. But he did. What I can say is when he was a minister, he fully embraced the Bible. I mean, it wasn't like, well, I'm not going to talk about that. He was a Baptist minister. But he had to, in his own mind, have some, you know, explanation or rationalization. I think once he started to dig into it more deeply, my guess is that it's like, we don't have to take these miracles literally, or maybe this happened over a period of time. I mean, I just think that there's many ways to make it more palatable than kind of the first superficial blush you might see when you're a child. But I don't know the answer, and I'd love to know.
I had another question. Did he acknowledge his debt to Gandhi on the nonviolence?
Absolutely.
Talk about that?
Yes. Yeah. So he was introduced, and this is what I ran out of time, it was in a 10-minute sermon. The president of the college, Morehouse College, had actually gone and met Gandhi. He was very influenced by Gandhi and met with him in nonviolence, came back, and then he, at the college, would have presentations on nonviolence, and Martin Luther King was first exposed to it at the college. And then eventually he went to India. Gandhi was dead at this point, but he went to India and observed and trained. He originally didn't think that nonviolence would work. He was fully aware of Gandhi's efforts. He didn't think nonviolence would work in the United States of America. His approach, they say, is more practical, is that the blacks didn't have the guns, you know, and so don't get into a gunfight when you're not armed. So, I mean, I think philosophically he embraced nonviolence, but he also realized there was a practical level to it as well. But then once he started to see how powerful it was, he really embraced the fullness of it. He said, and I can't remember the exact quote, but it's like, Jesus provided the philosophy, Gandhi provided the method. I mean, he literally was quoted to say
good.
That. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting in history that not a whole lot. I mean, you know, Martin Luther King made waves with equality of the races, but there wasn't a whole lot of real backlash until he started fighting the Vietnam War and poverty, because that started the going against the establishment, And what you two were talking about, the like Agabi and the pendulum, what I thought with the last election, and usually instinctually I can predict who's going to win, and even though I didn't want to, I figured that you know who would win. I thought, I think we have to get to the lowest point we can get until we can crawl back out of the hole. And I think that's what's going to, I think it's going to happen. And we've had dark days in the past. I mean, we've been through two world wars. I mean, this is just another one of those, and we'll come out of it. You know, it's going to be different. Like, history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. Isn't that what they say?
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Thank you.
Just a couple things. The first is that a very wise spiritual teacher once said to me, don't ever look at the news without praying over it or blessing it first. Mm-hmm. And it reminded me that I shouldn't go lightly into listening or looking at the news, but I should consciously stop and decide how I'm going to approach it with a prayer or a blessing. I think that Marianne Williamson is a moral leader that could be eventually the equivalent of a Martin Luther King. She's an amazing human being. If any of you have not looked at or read her stuff and her policies, and she's already making a change in this country, Marianne Williamson. And I'm choosing to look at, rather than a pendulum, I look at it as a spiral, that we are actually getting closer and closer to higher consciousness, or getting higher consciousness, but that we keep turning in the gyre, you know, as Yeats said. And when we get back to a point that feels like it was the same, oh God, we're here exactly before, just like in our own lives, you know, shit, I thought I, am I at this place again? No, we're not. We're at a higher consciousness level of it. And that helps me rather than the concept of a pendulum. I don't believe in the pendulum. I believe that consciousness is rising. And it looks real ugly.
Thank you.
Two things. There is a decent interview with Andrew Yang, the only remaining person of color in the Democratic running for president. And Stephen Colbert interviewed him last week. And they talked about that point. And rightly, Andrew Yang said, well, when the majority of people of color in your country are underserved and underprivileged and lower income, they don't have expendable income to donate to campaigns. And so you end up with, you know, the whitewashed view that we have now in these debates. And that's one thing. And I think another thing, Terry, you mentioned, how can I be fierce, maybe, or have integrity and make change with the hope of the tomorrow of change, even if we are in a more difficult time now? How can I rise above the feeling of that in anticipation of what may be next? And one thing I think of is children and youth. Youth refers to adolescents. You know, and there are three adolescents living in my home, angsty, apathetic, sometimes downright angry. And one of the things they criticize me for is being too kind and too nice to everyone. And, you know, they'll complain about something or someone, and I'll try to bring up that, you know, all people have worth, and, you know, you can not like someone, but that does not mean they're bad, you know. And they just go off on me about that. And I figure, well, if that's the worst they've got on me, I'm doing okay. But, you know, I really think that with children and youth is a wonderful place to use our voices and to get involved, whether it's in the community or shameless plug right here. I know they're looking for support for Jeff, our youth advisor. Mm-hmm. And with teachers as well, you know, and I think that's a beautiful place to get involved. Children and youth are amazing, and I may be jaded, but I believe in these current generations of children to be some of this change that we're hoping for. I don't think they're entitled. I think they're pretty amazing.
Yes, absolutely.
First of all, I like the second what you just said. I'm not too sure you can ever be too kind. But a couple of things. Agape love, when I was a teenager, when it was a little Presbyterian church, talked about agape love a lot. Another word for that is acceptance. You say you love these people. Well, you can also substitute acceptance there, too. That might help a little bit. I would like to say that Susan and I were just talking about pendulum versus spiral, etc. I look at it as a long straight line with time zones and stuff like that, because as time passes, hard as it is to see, the general society of the world, I think, is getting more and more acceptance and more to equal opportunities for all people. It's very difficult to see sometimes. And another issue is that I certainly do agree that hope is for the younger generation, and to do what we can for the younger generation to learn of peace and kindness, etc., like that, because those people who eventually will go out into the world, and somebody will listen to them sooner or later, I think. Thank you.
Yeah, I consider myself, obviously, having been somewhat of a political junkie. You know, I really like current events in history and in school. And being a Democratic child of two staunch Republican parents was pretty pretty interesting, of course, as we were doing in the 60s. But anyway, I mean, I'm always watching the news because I feel you need to stay informed. Although last night, after they had, the only thing that seemed halfway cheerful was about the royal family. What's going on with that? After that, I turned it off and said, I can't deal with any more impeachment stuff. But I feel unless you participate in the process, it's not going to change. So that's why starting out as a psychology major, going into sociology, because the only way you can change society is through, you know, social action. Then I got into political science, which is I graduated with those two degrees. So the only way you can change society is through the political system. If you don't, whatever's going to happen, it's going to happen. So I feel like I should be responsible for being part of that change. So that's just my opinion.
Yeah, we had actually in this room, we had a constitutional lawyer come and talk about exactly that. And I think one of the most powerful things she said was, the Constitution does not give you rights. You have to fight for those rights. And so, yeah, the Women's March yesterday, you know, any kind of peaceful action, I think, is, yeah, if you're not on the ground playing, you're part of the problem, quite honestly. You've got to be part of the solution.
So this will be our last comment or question today before we wrap up.
Well, this is just going to be a positive statement. Okay, so maybe there's not a person of color other than Andrew Yang who isn't real, real colored but on stage, but there were four to start with. When has that ever happened? I'm not entirely convinced that the reason there Kamala Harris and other people aren't up there is because of their color, and I don't think we should make the mistake of just automatically saying, oh, well, you didn't succeed or you weren't elected or you didn't get the job because of your color. We need to substantiate that and know that. So I'm not sure that's why. But anyway, there were four, and that was pretty good, and we heard from them.
That's a nice positive thing. Do you have anything else you would like to finish with, Terry?
I do not.
Thank you so much, everybody. It was nice to hear your thoughts and words. Yeah, thank you.
Because we need the strength.